Okay, don't forget the prayer list on Fridays. We put people on the prayer list who have illnesses, afflictions, need some special help. So just take a moment out of your time on Friday. It's good for you, too, to just say a little prayer. Use that power of your consciousness to get things done for them. You know, my friend, I'm putting him on the list, too, as I did. It's 2 weeks now. He's been in the hospital since falling, and he's still in paralysis, and he's going to undergo a tracheotomy on Monday, and also they're going to put a stomach tube in him to start feeding him a little bit more. It's just a bizarre story. But I got a call today from Bob Cohen, who's the owner of the Four Seasons in Los Angeles, and he was checking up on Mike. Everybody knows Mike. And so I was giving him an update. Then he was telling me about how he ran into four guys at the Four Seasons who each plunked down $200,000 with a deposit, $180,000 apiece, because they're going to take that Burt Rutan, Richard Branson space flight in 2011. Isn't that amazing? That's a lot of money to go up into space for like a 5-minute ride once you get up there. Truly remarkable. We'll come right back with more Open Lines on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast and Open Lines, and let's go right through the list here. Clearwater, Florida. Chris, it's your turn on Coast to Coast. Hey, Chris.
Hi, George. Thank you. I wanted to comment on those who want or thinking of trying to contact their deceased. After having my brother die about 16 years ago, started having a lot of experiences. My family and I started seeing certain lights of various sizes, pinpricks up to beach ball size. And then later on, we found out that after these lights had changed color and we'd gone through a sequence of colors, that the sequence actually matched what we later found in the Tibetan Book of the Dead, also called the Bardo Thedal.
Yes.
A lot of think of it as comparative. They compare it to their Book of the Life, but I just want to let them know that the title was mistranslated. It really means liberation by hearing on the after-death plane. And in there, they discourage the deceased's friends and relatives from asking them to distract them by contacting them, like by moving something or giving some advice, because that would mean they're expending energy on their past life. And what we should really be doing is encouraging them to merge with a clear light, with a rainbow light, as the song just played, which encompasses all colors. And it was just amazing, some of the feedback that I had received from my deceased brother, such as the circle of love analogy that we had been telling him to go further away, go into the light, go into the love, realize the wholeness and compassion of love. And the further you get away from us, the bigger that circle of love will get. Well, my father and I had two separate experiences that we told each other about, and were astounded to find that we had circles being drawn on our thigh or on my leg when I was meditating after speaking to my brother, I believe. So I wanted to encourage people that to merge with a clear light and to not try to contact their deceased loved ones. They might come in telepathic means or through dreams, but I wouldn't actually encourage them to go back to their past life, to move on and be ready for the overwhelming, dazzling senses that they're going to experience and to merge with love and compassion.
What has this taught you about the death itself, Chris? I bet you no longer fear death.
Not so much. I mean, it's natural, but it gets less and less with more experience and more astral travel and more out of body. But it's taught me a great deal not to mourn the deceased, whoever they are, to be happy for them. They're a lot more happier wherever we can encourage them to go. If we can tune into to get some, maybe I do encourage getting a little bit of feedback, but at the same time, just for the purpose of encouraging them to increase that circle of love, and people should share their dreams and their visions and their experiences, so that those of us who may not have them will get a more well-rounded picture.
Absolutely. Well said, Chris. Clinton, Maryland, we go now. Mark, it's your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi, Mark.
Hey, George, how you doing? Merry Christmas to you.
You too.
Yeah. George, I wanted to call you and address a problem that has been going on and increasingly getting worse, and I think it's now time to address it. George, my friend, I'm sorry to tell you this, but increasingly here up in the Maryland East Coast area, there's been a radio blackout of your shows. Every time you show G. Edward Griffin, and the other night, most importantly, when there was a show about the Bush administration, there was a complete radio blackout. Now, sir, I've been listening for many years to the station, and I've noticed that every time there's a controversial situation going on that the current administration didn't like, that there was some kind of a blackout going on. And I've researched my computer, and I've done all this and that and the other thing, and finally I just found out one thing. If you go to the Coast to Coast website, look up the affiliates web page, look at the affiliates pages, and just connect to the different sites in the affiliates, and you try one and the other. There's over 61 affiliates that I've looked at in the Coast to Coast websites. And if you try one or the other and then listen now, when you connect to those websites for those individual radio station affiliates, that one or the other may or may not connect. And you know what, sir?
What's that?
It's a terrible situation when over 16 bookmarks that I have, only three connect when G. Edward Griffin or a special like you had a couple nights ago where the Bush administration was looked at. All the rest were blacked out, and they weren't just blacked out.
You know, Mark, I want you to send me this information, if you would, and I'll get it to my affiliates folks and let them go to work on that. You know, some stations at night, late at night, will do what they call transmitter maintenance. Doesn't happen a lot, but sometimes they'll shut down for one or two or three days in a row, and we get dinged because we're the late show. That happens once in a while. But if there's a pattern and you're starting to follow it when we have very controversial shows on, and we do, I'd like to see that, okay? Like I told you, we're in 528 stations. I can't monitor every one every night, but get me that information. I'll get it to our affiliates people, and I'll have them go straight to the station and say, what's going on here? Why is this happening? And let's get some answers, and then that'll at least be a start for me, okay? So email it to me, george@coasttocoastam.com, if you would. Next up, let us go to Kevin in Omaha, Nebraska. You're on Coast to Coast. Hey, Kevin, welcome to the show.
Hey, what's going on, George?
All is well.
Hey, the past couple months I've been receiving, they're like chain letters from this secret society. Supposedly, it's called the Neotech Secret Society, and I didn't really think much of it. So, and I even found some of their books and material on eBay. Anyways, recently on November 7th, 2009, I received another letter from this secret society. I guess they have a new branch. It's called the Global Information Network, and it's a pyramid money-making type opportunity where you sign up people and into this secret society type deal, and you make money. Well, anyways, I went to the website, and this is the reason why I'm calling. Somehow, some way, they're using Alex Jones's name and David, was it Icke?
David Icke. Yeah.
Yep. David Icke. They're using both those guys' name.
Does it look like they're stealing their names, or maybe those two have given permission? What do you think?
I can't see either one of them attached to this, but this looks real official. The global.
All right. I tell you what, send it to me and I'll get that to David and to Alex and let them do their own little investigation. Okay. Let's go next to the international line. Gene, where are you calling from?
Lacombe, Alberta.
Okay, wonderful.
I've been very frustrated with the ClimateGate and with the Guardian article, and it just does not seem to be getting through. They seem to be carrying on like, you know.
No big deal, right?
Yeah, and then now they're that group, you know, that climate summit group, is seeming to coerce scientists, whether climatologists or not. One even stated that, you know, I better sign this or, you know, my research career is over.
Eh? All right, or they're going to take my grant money away. Or in some cases, Gene, they don't even work on climate change predictions or anything like that. They just signed it anyway.
So I was thinking what I'm going to do starting Monday, I'm in Canada, so every last MP I'm going to call, email, and with, you know, the Guardian articles, whatever. And hopefully maybe your listeners in the States can do the same thing.
You're going to do your own little campaign? Well, I think you should. You know, I've said all along, and this started with just my intuitive gut, that we are in an Earth cycle. And then I started investigating it even more, and I'm now convinced more than ever that we're in an Earth cycle, and there's a lot of money to be made by going after those who do not believe in climate change. And by, you know, it's just the way it is. Follow the money. Kenny in Louisville, Kentucky, your turn on Coast to Coast. Hey, Kenny.
Hey, George. How you doing?
Great, Ken.
Alrighty. I've got a story that I've only shared with a few people, some close family members and friends, and now I'd like to share it with the Coast to Coast family. When I got out of the military back in the 90s, I moved home, and I wanted to get a dog. And I was living with my mother and her husband at the time. And, you know, just getting out of the Army and being a parent.
Getting back on your feet, right?
Oh, yeah. I wanted to get a tough dog and, you know, maybe a bulldog or something like that. And
a pit bull. A pit bull.
You know, a manly dog. And my mother calls me and says, you know, some friends of the family have got this dog. I want you to go pick it up, and, you know, that'll be our dog. So I'm excited, and I go over there. It's the mangiest, maddiest Shih Tzu you have ever seen in your life.
And they're little, those little things.
They're little bitty lab dogs. And, I was devastated. George, I'm an animal lover, but this thing was so flea infested, I put it in the carrier and put it in the trunk of my car. It was, you know, I couldn't have it in the front, you know, fleas everywhere. And I felt bad about it, but, you know, so I put it in the trunk of the car and I get it home. And I didn't want to have anything to do with this dog. And my mother takes it and, you know, has dipped and cleaned up and, you know, and it just turned out to be the most beautiful dog you'd ever seen. But, you know, I didn't really want, you know, it wasn't my thing, you know, a lap dog. So every, you know, I'd wake up every day and this dog would be laying on my chest. And my mother would come, you know, to wake me up or to, you know, see what was going on. And the dog would growl at her and just, you know, the dog thought I had saved it. And, so my mother
isn't, you know, well, maybe you did, Kenny.
Well, I guess mom really saved it, but the dog,
but mom helped. Right? Yeah. Poor mom took the brunt of it.
Yeah, I guess she did. And, so mom, and her husband, they were going to move out of state and I had gotten married and moved out of the house and they offered me to buy their home. And, which this is great, but there was one condition. I had to take the dog. And by then I'd grown attached, you know, become attached to the dog and really loved this dog. And of course I'll take the dog, you know, thank you very much. You know, the home and the dog, and what a blessing. And, so, you know, time went on and me and my wife loved the dog and we ended up getting a rough divorce. And my wife had really taken care of this dog, you know, like did everything for the dog. And, you know, after 7 years of owning the home and the dog, you know, when we got divorced, I let her take the dog because I knew she would take care of it better than a guy on a bachelor pad, you know.
Exactly.
And after not talking to my ex-wife for about 5 years, I was working third shift, and I came home from work and sat down in the recliner and fell asleep. And a shot like lightning went through my body, and I jumped out of my chair and said, "Oh, my God, I've got to check on the dog." And, then I didn't do it, and the next day, my wife called me, or my ex-wife, and said, "I had to have the dog put to sleep yesterday." But the dog, you know, it just goes to show, you know, the people that call in with these stories, you know, sometimes I would believe them and sometimes not, but, oh, there's so much more out there, George.
Oh, my God. Sure is, Kenny. Ken, thanks for sharing that with us. And you get by on that. Boy, that's tough. That really is tough. Fast blast in from a mother-daughter team out there in Hawaii, Monica and Kristen, saying, love the show. Say hello to us. Hello. Let's go to Keith in Juneau, Alaska. Keith, let's get you in before the break. Go ahead, Keith.
Buenos dias, amigo.
Si.
¿Cómo está?
Now you're testing me, aren't you?
Are you fine?
¿Cómo se llama? Means, what is your name, right?
Right.
That's right. I had 2 years of Spanish. Yep.
Bien.
I'm fine.
Muy bien. Fine?
Muy bien.
Muy bien.
Yeah.
See, George, remember our conversation back like a year ago? I made that New Year's resolution.
Tell me more.
Remember Nostradamus Amigo? I went back to my Mayan
way. Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
It's almost been a year.
That's right. It's coming up.
And it's been a test.
Is it working for you?
Yes, it's been working, but it's also been a test at the same time.
What do you mean by a test?
It's like some people have like tested me on it. You know what I mean? They're like coming to me wanting to be my friend, and they don't understand that I'm already considering them my friend. And it's like, do you want to go backwards?
It works.
It works. That's right. It works. And now I can understand why that Mayan culture had such a strong society.
You're good, Keith. I like that. I mean, you got a good outlook, and he's very positive about certain things. Right around the corner, Richard C. Hoagland, we're going to talk about a couple issues, as I've been mentioning, that failed Russian missile, or as Richard will say, was it a missile? And then, of course, a story from some Indian scientists out of India that there could be life on the moon. So you stick around for both of those stories. And then I'll also tell you a little bit about what's in store next week right here on Coast to Coast AM, starting with Monday as we talk about the shadow government. Then we're going to talk about a spiritual hitchhiker's guide to the universe. Nick Redford comes in as we talk about science fiction secrets. And then the Shroud of Turin on Thursday. Right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, Richard C. Hoagland, our guest now for the final 30 minutes of the program with incredible insight about this Russian missile. Was it a missile? And also a story breaking out of India. Here he is. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning, George.
You are up and at 'em today, huh?
Well, there's a lot going on, you know, and it's hard to cram it into 20 minutes, so let's get right to it. I want to start with India because on the show a few weeks ago, remember, I made some predictions. Science is nothing if it's not prediction.
Right.
And I was describing the Indian discovery with this little probe that their Chandrayaan orbiting spacecraft, the first Indian spacecraft placed in orbit around the moon this past summer, had dropped off in a 20-minute descent to an impact on the surface of the moon near the lunar south pole, with an Indian pennant, you know, one of those little flags. And on the way down, this instrumented probe did a lot of measurements and radioed them back in real time before it, of course, crashed. As I reported several weeks ago, it detected something that really cannot be on the moon, a very thin atmosphere composed, among other things, of water vapor. Remember that?
Yes.
And I projected that because the original Apollo instrumentation from the Apollo experiments package left by the astronauts on the moon in many different places had not detected this thin atmosphere, that this had to be a relatively new feature in the last 40 years. And we got to the point where I said the only logical conclusion is there's somebody on the moon tonight, and they're leaking from spacesuits and airlocks, and in other words, a base, which has been rumored in certain communities for years and years and years.
That's true.
And that the Indians had inadvertently, or maybe advertently, they probably knew what they were doing, had picked this up in this probe in that 20-minute fall from orbit to the surface. Now, as part of that report, I projected a prediction. I said, if I'm right, they will also pick up various organic molecules. Remember I said that?
Yes.
Well, guess what? This afternoon at a international radar symposium, a gentleman named Surendra Pal, who is the associate director of the Indian Space Agency's Satellite Center, which is the space agency of India which launched the lunar probe, reported that indeed their little probe, MIP, as it was called, on the way down to the moon in that 20-minute fall to the surface, in fact, with its sensors, did detect organic molecules.
Oh, my.
And they're being very, very cautious about telling us what they're made of. But the headline in one of the Indian news services is rather bold. It says, Indian scientists detect signs of life on the moon. And then the story out of Bangalore follows, and we'll have this on the Enterprise website, sure, you know, before the evening is out. The point of this is, I have been saying for weeks, well, even months now, that this administration, President Obama and company, are building toward that magic D word that all the UFO community is all abuzz about, and that David Wilcock came on the show and made some pretty striking predictions that I do not agree with. But the general tenor where things converge is that it looks like our administration is building toward disclosing that we are not alone. And what we're seeing in the major media, in various stories, George, coming out of India, coming out of England, coming out of Houston, NASA, we're seeing various stories converging on the idea that organic life of some kind is out there, and that various human experiments by various space agencies have in fact detected it, and they're building to a climax. They're building to some crescendo. They're building to some endpoint of this story, which in my projection is that they're going to announce, the president could announce in the foreseeable future, hey, guess what? We're not alone.
We're not alone. That's true.
And you're looking at, for instance, besides this Indian story, which is pretty blatant, Indian scientists detect signs of life, you've got the Martian meteorite. Remember the Martian meteorite that was found 13 years ago?
Yes, and originally they thought it had the microbes, and they said no. Now they say it does. Yep.
Well, NASA's revisited that, and you just said it. They're now saying, well, it looks like those could be little microorganisms after all, et cetera, et cetera. Then we've had the Martian methane. And you know about the background of the Martian methane, that there's methane in the atmosphere of Mars. Methane is a very fragile molecule. It's destroyed by sunlight, by ultraviolet light from the sun, even at Mars distance, in just a few hundred years. And unless there was a constant source replenishing what's in the atmosphere, what was there at one point would have long since gone away. So there has to be some source that is replenishing the methane that we're seeing. Well, there have been a lot of theories about what could be causing methane. One was that meteorites or comets coming in from outer space, impacting on Mars, going through the atmosphere, could transport methane from the rest of the solar system, from the frozen elements of the solar system into Mars, and it would warm up and then, you know, flow through the atmosphere. Well, this week there was a paper, a study out of England, saying they had done experiments where they'd heated meteorites to those temperatures, and the amount of material they get out in the form of methane is orders of magnitude, hundreds or thousands of times smaller than would be required under any normal logical circumstance to supply the amount of methane that we're seeing in the atmosphere of Mars.
This is a great story, but why does it seem, Richard, it's all happening at the same time now?
Because it's all building politically toward the big climax.
Yeah, I'm now at a point where I agree with you. I wasn't so sure.
There's too many dots. Yeah, and, for instance, today, the head of NASA, Obama's new NASA administrator, Charlie Bolden, Marine General Charlie Bolden, was supposed to have an address in San Diego, and he suddenly canceled it. And the head of the Augustine Commission, Norm Augustine, the former CEO of Lockheed, was giving an address apparently last night at MIT, and he let loose a little bit of information that key papers involving the future of NASA and the future of the human spaceflight program are literally on the president's desk. meaning Obama is about to make the decision that so many of us have been anticipating for months now. And I have a feeling, I can't, you know, put my finger on a specific fact other than the dots I've been laying out here, but I have a feeling that part of that decision-making and announcement from the president is going to involve these dots connected to the point where we have to expand the NASA space program in order to find out conclusively if we are indeed alone.
Well, look what's just happening just this year alone. We get the Vatican talking about the possibility of extraterrestrial life. We have water on the moon, all these things you've been saying for years.
Yep.
Water on the moon, possibility of life on Europa now, Martian life, which you've been saying all along, and now we're talking about life on the moon. I'm convinced that this universe is teeming with life, not just our solar system, but I think it's all over the universe.
Well, yes, it is. And we can probably prove that in some academic way, but where it really meets the road is how is it going to affect us here on Earth? And how is it going to affect this administration and what Obama did 2 days ago in Oslo? Because as you open this segment, and I won't have much time to talk about it, but I got to get it in here.
Yeah.
A very remarkable, absolutely phantasmagorical event occurred just a few hours before the president arrived in Oslo, Norway, to accept his Nobel Peace Prize.
The spiral looks like a hologram up there.
Well, yes. And there have been a lot of comment, a huge amount of comment all over the world on the internet. What did we do with these events before we had the internet? Well, we didn't. We just kind of read newspaper reports months or even years after the events. Now we can almost watch them as they happen. The cover story, which has been put out belatedly, was that it was the Russian Navy conducting a submarine-launched missile test, which failed, and failed in such a fashion that it spiraled around in the sky in a kind of a death throes, producing that extraordinary spiral figure hovering over the mountains to the east of Tromsø, Norway, the very north.
But where did the blue beam come from, Richard?
Well, the beam is so interesting because as I'm tracking on the story, and all of this is on enterprisemission.com, I've written a one-part analysis that is going to be expanded now into part two. I've been working on part two all night. I thought I might have it ready to post by the time I did this tonight for you, but it's not quite done yet, and you know I'm punctilious about documentation and references, and I've gotten some really amazing stuff coming out of Russia. This was not a missile test at all. Furthermore, it could not have been a Russian missile test. The reason, George, is that they aimed them in the other direction. They aim them toward Kamchatka, which is that island, you know, over way over on the eastern side. And there's no way that this phenomenon seen over Tromsø was visible from more than 30 miles away from Tromsø.
Now, you pointed out that there's HAARP out there.
On the other side of the mountain, that big mountain you see over the lighted bay with the spiral in the sky, right where that blue corkscrew beam appears to be descending behind the mountains, there is a huge Norwegian HAARP facility, high altitude auroral research project, a bunch of transmitters, you know, over, you know, a few square miles, radiating several billion watts of microwave energy into the ionosphere in various experiments that the HAARP people coordinating all over the world have ostensibly been carrying out to probe the ionosphere in the last, you know, couple of decades. Well, HAARP also can be used to generate torsion field physics. When you interact microwaves with plasmas, the ionosphere up above the Earth, you create torsion field energy, the same kind of energy I was measuring on that sci-fi special for 2012 down at the pyramids in Mexico and in Guatemala.
As Michael Shermer would say, with your Bulova watch.
Well, you know, Michael is a little behind the curve. I won't say anything more, but, you know, he really needs to get out and read more. The point is that when you put all this together, you have dot, 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 building that it's an inhabited universe, at least with microbes. You have presidential directives pending that will totally revamp and give NASA a brand new mission, perhaps a la John Kennedy. You have a young president, the first black American president ever elected, who gets 9 days after he's elected, he gets the damn Nobel Prize for Peace, and he himself says, I don't deserve this. I didn't do anything yet. I'm at the beginning of my career. The bottom line, George, in this meta model is that I believe we are being carefully prepared for the announcement, A, we're not alone, and B, there must be a united global effort to find out who is out there. And the most important person as part of that global effort is going to be the one man that everyone can kind of agree on, left, right, center, you know, Russian, Indian, Chinese, Burmese, you know, Vietnamese. That guy is Barack Obama. It's back to when Carl Sagan did Cosmos. He had a segment called Who Speaks for Earth? Well, in the scenario that someone is going to have to speak for Earth, the most likely candidate as of yesterday is President Barack Hussein Obama.
And they're not doing this just with hoopla over microbes on Mars or the moon. It's bigger than that, isn't it?
I think it's much bigger than that, but you got to get pregnant somehow. I mean, you can't shock people by saying, oh, by the way, we're part of this huge extended family. It's millions of years older than we think we are, and we're kind of the poor cousins, and we've been relegated to the boonies, and they may let us back in the family if we really, really, really play nice. You can't start at that level. You've got to start, as I said on the show a couple, 3 days ago, you start with microbes, you move to artifacts, and then you let people know, oh, there's the folks that built them that we also have to take into account. And, oh, by the way, here's a couple who dropped in for the evening. That's the scenario I see. Now, I cannot give you a time frame for when this is going to kick into high gear, but I will say that if you read the president's speech, read his Nobel acceptance speech of yesterday. It's on the web. Go to the White House website. Download it. You know, it's on the news services. AP has got a copy up there somewhere. Read it very carefully and read it with multiple sets of eyes and meaning. It is a preparation for him speaking on behalf of the human community to much bigger problems than people are currently imagining in the mainstream media. At least that's my analysis.
Good take. Richard, about a minute left. What's in store for you and Robin for Christmas? What are you doing?
Well, we're
and where's my gift? Where's my DVD? You always send me a nice gift every year.
Actually, I have one. We did the Secrets Conference and a couple weeks ago, and it's in post-production. We're going to be getting it out to people at Christmas. If you want to order it, you know, the address is there on the Enterprise website. I will say that by connecting the dots in Tempe, which was the connection between John Kennedy, NASA, the Secret Space Program, and 2012, it absolutely connects like an arrow through time with these peculiar events surrounding Obama and the Nobel Prize and what occurred in the skies over Norway, which, again, was not a missile test. And so you're going to be getting that package as your Christmas present, George. Sorry I couldn't keep the surprise, but you kind of blew the game.
You know me, always looking ahead. Richard, thank you so much for being on the program. Richard's website, enterprisemission.com, also a good Christmas gift is his updated version of his new book, Dark Mission. You can always find that at amazon.com as well.
I never knew I had Martians in my garden, and I never knew there were aliens on my roof. I got shadow people, and they're living in my basement. Got a funny feeling Bigfoot's gonna be here soon. I was so blind before, I was so unaware, but now I swear I'm seeing Sasquatch over there. I can see the light, and I also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Well, you never knew that your baby was a hybrid, but as he grew, you began to see the clues. Now you know the signs, 'cause you learned it from George Norrie. Even while you sleep, you got Martians watching you. I turned on my radio in the middle.
middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know, and I can see the light.